If you've been told to pull up your socks, then make sure it's a pair of TNT socks. The TNT shop is now open at TNTRadio.live. This is the Chris Smith Show on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
G'day, g'day. Welcome to the program. Welcome to the Australian edition of the Global News Talk Network, TNT Radio. If you're new to this network, well, you've struck gold. This is the place where we stand up for the freedom of speech. And hasn't the freedom of speech been under all sorts of fire in the last 2 weeks in Australia? It is good to have your company, and you've come at the right time. There are so many big stories to cover today. It is busy. And I tell you what, there's lots of feisty opinion to canvas as well. I want to begin with one of those trendy green twisted attempts to control the public. In this case, control the driving public. Now, you may have been following the introduction, mainly in the UK, of low traffic neighbourhoods, LTNs. It's an ideological green scheme to have us drive at 20 miles per hour, about 32 kilometres per hour. And we're somehow going to save the planet, you see, if we do that. We'll also save lives, and we'll save the mental health of our neighbour. Well, I'll tell you why the very first LTN project in the world has failed miserably. Yes, it has. All the critics said it would, and they were absolutely right. And Rishi Sunak has a gigantic egg right on his forehead because the UK Prime Minister has been behind this big time. The politically incorrect former radio talkback man Jim Ball is on deck today to talk about the admission by one former Australian PM that he needed to be medicated to cope with the stress of the top job, while another former PM believes he has the answer for the troubled conservative movement, and it is not becoming more centrist, as many of those in the Liberal Party in various states of Australia think it is. Now, I won't let go of the Australian Labor government's attempt to censor what you say, censor what you see on social media. I think we have a duty to keep picking away at what is a gross invasion of our rights to be heard and our rights to be seen, and in particular, the right to see what are some of the biggest criminal news stories filmed and see them on social media. And of course, the mainstream media in Australia has rolled over in favour of censorship as opposed to transparency. But that is the nature of the legacy mainstream media. Now, this eSafety Commissioner, Julie Inman Grant, is a power-hungry czar who I think needs to be dumped. And Perth independent journalist Rebecca Barrett has done some wonderful work on this woman's background. And you might be surprised at what she's been doing for the past 25 years. It explains a lot. It explains a hell of a lot as to why she wants to crack down on X. Isn't it funny? The vision that they want to crack down on has been removed from X. They're still threatening X, and yet the vision is freely available on YouTube and other social media sites. Not a word about the other social media sites. What does that tell you about Julie Inman Grant? We'll explain a little bit later. We'll get to intelligence and terror expert Shane Healy today on the program. We're going to talk about Gaza. We're going to talk about Iran. Iran has not forgotten what has occurred to them in the last week and how Israel has done the unthinkable, according to Iran, and Iran is threatening all sorts of nasty counterattacks. So we'll keep across all of that. And this week's anti-terror raids in Sydney, there are five young people in custody. Alarmingly, some of them are alleged to have been planning to commit another act of Islamic-inspired terrorism. So we'll talk to Shane Healy about what he knows and what he's heard on the ground. Hollywood actress Ashley Judd has reacted to this bombshell news out of the United States that a court there has overturned that rape conviction against disgraced movie mogul Harvey Weinstein. This, of course, was the central part of the Me Too movement, but it's all fallen by the wayside. It's not over until the fat lady sings. I'll play for you what Ashley Judd said on BBC, and I'll explain what is the next step. And our Please Explain skit later is a very good one today, and it exposes the clowns in the federal government of Australia who are doing all they can to censor what we say and censor what you now see. So lots of spiky territory to cover on the program, but always time to hear from you. And you can do that freely, unedited. There's no ceiling on opinion. On our talkback lines, you can call in from the United States or Canada on 1-888-201-6425. You can call from the UK on 033-0024-1026. And from Australia or New Zealand, 1-800-670-310. They are our numbers. Let's get on with this. You're with Chris Smith, broadcasting live on the Global News Talk Network. This is TNT.
The latest headlines waiting for you.
I follow the news pretty much throughout the day.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
You know, more and more in this world, I am witnessing some of these ideological green strategies put into practice, only to be exposed as fraudulent and is totally impractical. Whether it's wind farms on the, let's say, the east coast of the United States, big story this week, and whether it's low traffic neighborhoods, they're starting to fall over. How often have we canned the madness of low traffic neighborhoods? It's one of the favorite community concepts pushed by British Prime Minister Rishi Sunak and his green disciples in the Tory cabinet. You see, they think that if you slow every vehicle, every driver down to a snail's pace, life will change for the better. We'll all be smiling. We'll all be very happy. There'll be no accidents, no. Mental health will improve because it'll be quieter. And the lower carbon monoxide emitted will help save the planet. Of course it will. No more global boiling. Now, Sunak says the modelling shows, that the 20 miles an hour concept will work. And he said very, very frequently that it will be very popular. His words, popular and it will work. Wrong. In Wales, where this flimsy and impractical concept was first introduced across the country last September, that's when I first spoke about it, their low traffic neighbourhood speed limit of 20 miles an hour or 32 kilometres an hour. Now, for the Australian audience, you think about going at 40 kilometres an hour, which is slow enough. Think about 32 kilometres an hour. Well, it's just been dumped. The phase out will be complete by September of this year. No less than 500,000 Welsh drivers, many of whom had been fined for travelling at the disastrous speed of 24 miles per hour in a 20 miles per hour zone, well, they signed an online petition to end the lunacy. That was 500,000 just on the petition, let alone what was being heard on talkback radio for months and months. It caused frustration. It caused accidents. Yes, because you're in a car, you're frustrated, you're going so slow. If you're a bad driver, nothing changes because you go slow. And, of course, the public turned on the government for daring to take away their right to drive at what was 30 miles per hour. And even in England, there are boroughs right now trialling LTNs, about six of them. As motoring journalist Quentin Wilson told Times Radio this week, slowing drivers down to 20 doesn't make them better drivers.
Does 20 mile an hour speed limit, do they make people better drivers? And I think that's another question we need to look as a society and say, are we teaching people to drive properly? We do it all in this 1 year window and we rush it through. You know, we should be starting this kind of hazard awareness and the skill of looking round 180 degrees to look if there are any obstacles at school, and not after they've had 10 years watching Top Gear and Grand Theft Auto. So I think there's a lot of science we can apply to this to make our roads safer and to make the air cleaner.
It makes entirely great sense, doesn't it? You think about all the subjects a child does at school, even in year 11 and 12, they'll be driving just about every day of their lives. Wouldn't it make sense that you taught them the proper way to drive so that they could adapt every day of their life on the road? There may be an argument, of course, to slow people down to 20, if that is the speed limit that they choose, outside of schools, maybe around hospitals. I get that. But to do it across one third of all roads in Wales, yes, that's what they did, one third of all roads around Wales, and there's a borough just outside of London that has it across 70% of all their roads, Hadur, just amazing. It is just ideological claptrap. And according to the House of Commons Library, guess what it cost the Welsh taxpayer? It cost £34 million to bring this in. Signage, you name it, campaigns, £34 million. The 20-mile-an-hour law included a freeze, get this, on all new road infrastructure as well, which angered drivers even more. That madness, by the way, the ban on infrastructure, remains in place. They don't want to encourage people to get into their cars, so they'll just make the roads just look terrible, drive terribly, the surface will be wrecked and ripped up, but we won't be fixing anything. Oh, no. That will encourage people to get into their cars. There are some things people can't do without. Now, not surprisingly, it's all led to a no-confidence motion placed by the Welsh Conservatives against the Labor Transport Minister behind the project, and he's just announced he'll be stepping down as well, not surprisingly. It's been a complete fiasco. And as Quentin Wilson says, there are proven driver trials all throughout Europe which the UK should be learning from.
There's the three E's, I call them. There's education, there's engineering, and there's enforcement. So you educate your drivers to decide what the most appropriate speed is. You engineer roads to make sure that they aren't dangerous and they don't have these built-in hazards. And then if that doesn't work, then of course you have enforcement. But this whole principle about making drivers aware of what is appropriate in the road conditions is something we've got to work on. And there are experiments where you take away all the road signage, and it's been done quite successfully in Europe. And drivers just drive at the speed that they think is appropriate. And that's a much, much better way than the kind of draconian enforcement that we've seen with this.
Of course, it's a much better way. A good driver knows how fast they should be going. Take all the signs away, as they did in Europe in that trial, and you'll find that the driver adapts. I find it amazing that in their evangelical fervour to save the planet from global boiling, green governments absolutely everywhere, but in particular in the UK, are intent on removing our freedoms and removing our rights. And that's what they've done in terms of driving speeds in the UK. Slowing drivers down to a snail's pace is grossly invasive. It's unscientific, completely unscientific, and a terrible example of how even local governments find ways to control us, to control their constituents. Leave the speed limits as they are, put more resources into creating better, more aware drivers, start at school level. That's what all the experts say, start then. And you wouldn't need to apply draconian laws on the driving public. Message to do-gooder green governments, get out of our faces and leave us alone. This is TNT.
TNT's Jason Burmess.
Unfortunately, constantly, I'm talking to these political analysts that don't see any way out of the current situation except vote harder. And then every time that I bring up the fact that we have not only a corrupt system via the mail-in ballots, via the ballot harvesting, but the machines, I get a lot of radio silence. I get sometimes a nod and an agreement with me, but there's never a solution that's presented other than we need to go back to paper ballots and voter ID. Duh. Can anyone tell me how we get there? Can anybody tell me how we get there?
Jason Burmess on today's News Talk, TNT. TNT is an independent global news talk station that does what others only say they do. TNT is a live radio and TV broadcaster that simply tells the truth 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. No one in the world does what we do, crisscrossing the globe,
providing credible news and opinion all day and all night. In 2.5 years, TNT has become a credible and exciting platform with brilliant hosts and staff. It's a critical time, and we must continue to call out the misinformation and propaganda from mainstream media and their powerful sponsors. We're now appealing to our many friends and supporters around the world to go to TNTRadio.live and make a small donation to TNT while we seek the right investors to continue our important mission. If you're talking about it, we're talking about it. Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Hey, good to have your company on this final time together for the week. It doesn't mean that things are slowing down. It's a really, really big news week. And of course, most of the major stories keep developing as we get until Friday. And you'll see how that has happened when I catch up right now with former nighttime champion of Australian commercial talkback radio, the very politically incorrect Jim Ball. Jim, welcome back to TNT.
Yeah, hi, Chris. It's been a great week. And as you said, there's an absolute banquet of stuff to talk about. We won't even get near the sides of it.
No, we won't. It's full on.
It's a deep swamp.
Yeah. I want to talk about Scott Morrison. The former PM is about to release his autobiography. We'll be getting snippets and excerpts everywhere. No doubt he'll be rewriting history, as most PMs do, you know, as they prop up their lost legacy. But he's in The Australian today. The book is titled Plans for Your Good, A Prime Minister's Testimony of God's Faithfulness, which really does underline his faith and his commitment to faith, probably more than we kind of realised. We've had some snippets in the Oz today, including the fact that the PM had to rely on medication to fight anxiety and depression. Here he is on tape.
Now, your own anxiety, when did that manifest itself the most to the point? Was it during your...
Oh, I think it sort of built up. I couldn't put my finger on a particular time, but, you know, it was a very stressful period, and the combination of the weight of issues, the length of hours that we were working, the physical demands that that brought. And to be honest, the stuff around China was as, if not more, distressing than the pandemic. And then you add to that the, particularly when you got into 2021. In 2020, there was a bit more of birth given, I think, in media and otherwise, and in politics, to just getting on with it and trying to save the country. Sort of politics as usual returned in 2021.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it was a pretty punishing time, and this all sort of compounded quite a bit. And, you know, you're flesh and blood.
I've got to say, Jim, before you unpack all of that for us, I've got some sympathy for more modern day prime ministers, and I mean in the last 10 to 15 years, because they are under scrutiny by modern media more than any other prime minister in history.
Oh, no question. I just can't imagine. I'm glad you qualified that. Just in recent years, technology being what it is. Can you imagine Keating or Howard, Hawke or Whitlam with this kind of, or Abbott, with this kind of stream of personal consciousness? I just don't imagine it. And I think a lot of it's got to do with whether you're a political warrior or not and committed to your cause or not.
How do you mean?
Well, if you're a warrior and you have convictions, you have no trouble sleeping at night. You're what you're doing and what you believe, everything squares and you can go to bed thinking, well, I'm doing this because this is what I think. This is what I've preached about for years and years and years, and I think those guys sleep well at night. I mean, Keating, Howard, Abbott, even Gough Whitlam were all political conviction politicians. Scott Morrison came from a background, I think just before politics as a career. Well, it wasn't a career. It came late in life to him. I think he was promotions and marketing manager for the Tourist Bureau or something like that.
Tourism Australia,
And so in those kind of positions, it's easy to flip-flop and try and please everyone and glad hand everyone, but eventually you end up pleasing no one. And I think that baggage comes with you when you get into politics. What's that? There's an old line about conservatives are lefty liberals that have been mugged by reality, and I think that's what's going on here. Morrison got in there. And I think he was always a bit of a softy, a bit of a lefty, and with no great convictions. I don't think he did. I think he just did whatever he thought would get him through the day. Mm. Say one thing to one person, another thing to another person, and this is where your comment about technology comes into play. The internet never forgets. Mm. Even the likes of, say, Donald Trump, even though he's unskilled politically, he's hard-nosed in the business sense. Mm. So all of these guys, Howard, Hawke, Keating, the lot of them, Whitlam, they all come to the table with a thick skin. Mm. They've been through all the stuff. For some of them were in politics for, in Howard's case, since he was Malcolm Fraser's treasurer.
Yeah.
Right? And so he was there for 20-odd years, and he got dumped, and he came back, and he got dumped, and he came back, and he finally broke through. So this toughens these guys up. They've got hides like a rhinoceros. Mm. And you take somebody like Tony Abbott. Now, Abbott, you can read his stuff, today's paper is an example, very regularly in Quadrant, very regularly on the pages of The Australian and elsewhere. These guys are, he's a prodigious thinker. He's a prodigious philosopher. Mm. And he has no trouble articulating what he thinks. And yeah. The attitude is, well, you know, like at a time when a lot of people were saying, well, we don't worship the Queen, worship's probably the wrong word, Abbott he wore his monarchy label as a measure of pride.
Yeah, badge of honor.
A lot of people would be scared to do that.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. You make a very good point about Scott Morrison. What did he stand for? What did he stand for? He oscillated.
That's right.
Depending on the temperature of the politics of the week.
Yes, exactly right. And I think when you've come from that background of tourism, marketing, promotions, whatever, look, you can say one thing to one guy, you can do deals in the back room. It's of no great consequence, and the average person doesn't know it's going on. But you can't bring that into the political theatre.
Yeah.
And I think Abbott made a good point today too in that article in The Australian. He said about the Libs and I think we're going to
well,
go
he's
there.
Well, he's saying that the idea that electoral success means moving more centre-right is wrong. And he's sort of suggesting that the answer for the Conservatives to get out of the wilderness, and they are in the wilderness, they're kind of as extinct as the Tasmanian tiger at the moment in terms of government, they've got to forget about moving over and becoming Labor light. I think he makes very good sense.
Absolutely. Look, I was saying this back in the day, Malcolm Turnbull, all these guys were Labor light. They think, well, if we move further to the left, we've got the Conservatives stitched up anyway, they're with us, so no one's going to notice. Well, I'm sorry, it's like the Beatles are playing here and around the corner there's a cover band playing. Hmm. I mean, who are you going to go and see?
That's interesting. That's a really good analogy, because by replicating what the opposition is doing, you become weaker than your opposition.
Labor light.
Yeah.
But Abbott says this internal struggle is not as often claimed between Conservatives and Liberals, but between conviction, my word there, and opportunism, because it's not really liberalism that's now at war with conservatism. It is progressivism manifested inside centre-right political parties via the notion that electoral success means moving to the left in order to pick up centre-left votes because right-wing voters have nowhere else to go. And I just think they should hold their ground. Eventually, the left will go so far left, as is happening right now. Mm. Look at America. People are swarming back. Trump went to a work site today before work, before court, 6:30 in the morning, and the crowds were just nuts, totally nuts. Yeah, these are all blue-collar workers, all Biden's-type Democrats who are now saying no more. Yeah, so if you go too far one direction, the pendulum will always swing back, and that's what Abbott's talking about.
It's interesting. I know three very, very well-known, almost household-name politicians, some of them still in power, who have said to me privately that they don't believe that, you know, the climate is boiling, that the climate is warming, that it's a natural progression, that down the track our research and development will sort out anything that needs to be corrected, if of course it needs to be corrected. We shouldn't be spending trillions of dollars on trying to prevent CO2 emissions. And yet they are the full bottle, Jim, charging down the same alley as Peter Dutton, joining the Labor Party on this climate boiling fiasco.
Well, it's a total farce. It's a hoax. And this is the point. I always thought the electricity bills would scare people back the other direction. Once they saw climate change manifesting in their letterbox in electricity bill, they would say, hey, just a minute, all these renewables. But that hasn't happened. So basically it hasn't got bad enough yet. It hasn't got bad enough.
Well, I blame the opposition for that. I don't think Peter Dutton is doing enough of getting up on a daily basis and saying, here is Joe Bloggs' latest electricity bill. Have a look at the number and have a look at the number they paid 3 years ago. Yeah. That is the criminality of following down the green evangelism. They should be prosecuting this.
Hammering it every day. The one thing I've got to say to Dutton, and I wrote to a whole lot of people way before the last election saying, go the nuclear route. And eventually, I'm not saying I caused it, but the point is that they're actually now saying we're going to go nuclear. Now, okay, he's in opposition. He can't do much about it. But he's got to get on there, hammer the case, make the point, and then take it to the election and prosecute the case.
Yep, exactly. We want to talk censorship, which has dominated headlines in the last 2 weeks. And there are some of us who need to fight the good fight on this. Let's talk about that after a break. I've got to get to the newsroom for a news update right here on TNT.
News doesn't stop breaking, and we don't take a break from covering it.
TNT Radio News.
Matt Boyland here with a look at your TNT headlines. Israel has been accused of carrying out field executions in Gaza following the discovery of multiple mass graves in the Palestinian territory. It's been revealed the US is considering turning unused oil rigs in the Pacific Ocean into floating military bases that would be used to fire missiles and resupply US warships. And Moscow has warned it would downgrade relations with Washington if the US confiscates frozen Russian assets.
We're the pinup boys and poster girls for free speech. We just don't look as impressive as Vladimir Putin shirtless on a horse. Yeah. 24/7, 365. We never stop sifting fact from fiction, misinformation from the truth. From government overreach to the latest on mandates, big tech censorship to propaganda gone mad. Listen to TNT Radio and get the news and views direct from our expert presenters and commentators anywhere you go. Ask Alexa or Google to play TNT Radio or download the TNT Radio app for free from the App Store or Google Play. Today's news talk. This is TNT Radio.
Hey, good to have your company. Now, I noticed that Mike, one of our viewers, has decided to contribute to the chat box on tntradio.live, and he says that Scott Morrison should have tried eating better and exercising. Morrison took sneaky, unethical shortcuts that makes you sick. Yes, Jim Ball is right. Morrison did what would get him through the day. Stand for nothing. You'll fall for anything.
Yep. That's a oldie, and that must affect your mental health.
Yeah, has to. Jim, the story of the month in Australia is the censorship battle between the e-safety czar and Elon Musk's ex-social media platform. I think it's gross to censor video facts, especially ones that expose the evil nature of extreme Islam. And I wonder how much politics is involved in the decision to get rid of that stuff. But on the other hand, ASIO boss Mike Burgess is appealing today to the tech giants to assist in assessing encrypted material associated with suspected terrorist and pedophile organisations that he says is contained on social media. Now, I understand what Mike Burgess is saying. He is saying something completely different to what the eSafety Commissioner is saying. The outrageous approach to censor-free speech and freely posted video is causing all sorts of problems. But to fine, you know, $750,000 a day is not the way to get X to help you weed out these evil criminals that Mike Burgess is talking about.
Yeah. Look, this particular video, this stabbing thing, I haven't seen it. Just a second. Can you see me all right there? I'll just stand by.
Yeah.
There it is. Something just came up on my screen. I haven't seen the video. But what I find interesting is the alacrity and the over-the-top haste to take it down.
Yeah.
Why this video? Why this particular video? I'll tell you why I think. It's a stalking horse for a much larger global agenda. Australia is the lab rat. right? If they can get Twitter to take this down, and you know that it's game over. This is I've called it the camel's nose under the tent. That's an old Arabic cliche where the camel gets the nose under the tent flap and then just pushes and pushes, and eventually the entire camel is inside the tent. So that's what this is. And who the hell is this finger wagging nanny Julie Inman Grant to be dictating to the world? Because that's what she's doing. Well, interesting background. She's a former head of Microsoft who worked as a government affairs manager for Microsoft, then became head of corporate affairs. She became Asia Pacific director of internet safety, privacy and security at Microsoft, serving in that capacity till 2009, global director for safety and privacy policy and outreach. Then, interesting, in 2014, Grant became director of public policy in Australia and Southeast Asia at Twitter, right? Which used to be, or which is now X. Mm. And of course, that was under the old regime. Mm. Now, if it was still under the old regime, well, first of all, would they have allowed this on their platform? And would she be singing a different tune if that were the case? But the question I find troubling and rather problematic, why this specific video, when you can access daylight shootings, murder, dare I say, passenger planes running into the World Trade Center, they're still up there. Your kids have got porn a few fingertips away on their smartphones. Mm. Young boys and maybe girls too. I don't know, but that's out there. So why? I come back to it. Why this particular video? It's got all the potential to be the thin end of the wedge for a much larger global agenda, a forerunner to government controlling the narrative. They love that. And you know something? It's reminiscent of that comment by Jacinda Ardern, unless you hear it from us, it's not the truth. That's what she said some years ago. I mean, think about the collusion, the censorship, this censorship script. We've seen it before. Think about the FBI ganging up and not allowing the Hunter Biden laptop story, or when Apple and Amazon and the rest of big tech, they ganged up on the little platform Parler, which was kind of a Twitter, but in those days, Twitter was all left wing. Mm. At least Musk has opened it up to any kind of use, right? Mm. Mm. So I think this is far more sinister than it appears. Mm. It's not just about this one video. This is the stalking horse for this much larger agenda.
Well let me point out.
Musk's instincts are 100% right.
Yeah, and as I said yesterday on the program, don't tell me that the Labor Party is not doing this so they can do the right thing by their Muslim voters in various electorates in Sydney, so that you don't highlight the fact that a young Muslim boy has gone to the extremist side and tried to stab to death a bishop. They're trying to hide it to placate their voters, Jim. Mm, mm.
That's right. This is all part of the Labor governments and other governments around the world. It's all part of their muzzling information and them putting stuff up saying, well, you can't have that up because it's all part of the whole misinformation legislative push.
Yeah.
That's what it is.
And it is an outrageous approach, and it's starting to get some real big international reaction. Here is podcaster Dan Bongino letting rip.
Australia has fallen. Australia's now gone full communist. They have not only demanded that the video be pulled down just because they said so, but they're demanding now that it be pulled down globally, not just in Australia, because the place has gone full communist.
You see, Jim, when you abide by the First Amendment and have the First Amendment as your shining star, like they do in the United States, they would look at what we're doing in Australia and go, you are joking, aren't you?
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, sometimes I think, and I make a comment about this a little later, I think the whole freedom of speech thing, when that was first put up as a constitutional amendment, I think they actually should have put in brackets within reason or reasonable free speech, because it means anything to anyone. Mm. And it's not only speech now, it's action. Like, I want to do this because it's my freedom of speech. They've tied everything back to freedom of speech. So I think it's been pushed way too far. And but this is ridiculous. And like I said, this is a stalking horse. She is doing the work. She used to work for a politician in Washington State. So that tells you a bit about her. Now, he was a Republican, but I imagine a Republican politician, this is, I think it was 91, 92, in Washington State, he'd be a left-wing politician.
Of course he would.
She used to work for him. Yeah.
Stand by for a bloodbath at the Queensland state election in October. The latest YouGov polling has given Labor Premier Stephen Miles the worst numbers for the party in 20 years. He trails the LNP 56-44, two-party preferred, mind you, which extrapolates to the loss of 21 seats. That is a bloodbath. He sounded like he had accepted his fate at a press conference in Mackay earlier today.
As I said at my last press conference in Mackay, there's no great surprise in these numbers. We've known for some time that David Crisafulli and the LNP are ahead and most likely to win the next election. And that means it's really important now that they start to outline what their plans are for Queensland. They can't just coast to victory as a small target with their slick slogans but no plans.
That's almost a concession speech, isn't it?
Doug did have that feel about it. he's seeing the writing on the wall, and he's obviously going to try and push back and fight against it. But I think these things build up a momentum. I mean, I'll cover this in just a second. I wrote down some numbers from 2 months ago and where they are now, and it's appalling. Look, I'm not sure what the difference is or the degree of difference is between a savaging and a mauling. But whatever it is, that's their trajectory in October. They're talking about a 21-seat loss. 21 seats, that is a mauling. That is a savaging. That is a bloodbath. It's all of the above. Nothing.
Which is why I thought when Palaszczuk left, I thought the worst thing they could do is to put in Palaszczuk's offsider, because it looks as if, you know, Stephen Miles continues the Palaszczuk regime. What they needed was someone fresh and new, and they had options there. They didn't go for that. The party has made a gross error. Mm. Although I have a feeling the longer you're in power, even in Queensland, the closer you're getting to being kicked out.
Well, look, there is the other point in this too, Chris. They've been there since 2014,
yeah.
I think. And this is going to be the biggest bloodbath since Campbell Newman came in 2012. The other factor, this there is an it's time thing about this.
Mm.
And all political parties go through it. The people get bored. They get they feel like they've been taken for granted. And the it's time factor, which developed under Whitlam, once you get sucked into that vortex and you're swirling around and about to go through the S-bend, there's no point fighting it. Mm. It's happened to all political parties over time. The one thing is that this is just a single poll 6 months out from an election. Sure, it's a single poll. But at what point does a single poll and a previous single poll and a previous single poll become a trend? I think they're there now.
Yeah.
Just going back in February, it was a 50-50 split and a 51-49 split, two-party preferred.
It's only 2.5 months
yes,
ago.
But now that's 56-44. So that's what's happened.
Yeah.
And that is the highest primary vote for the opposition since May 2016. But still 10 points lower than the 54% achieved in the wake of Campbell Newman's landslide in 2012. Here's the rub. Labor government's diminishing primary voters also delivered a 6-point bump to the Greens. So they're not necessarily going to the LNP. Many of them are going over to the Greens. See how that pans. Maybe there'll have to be some kind of meeting of the minds between the Greens and the LNP.
Oh, no.
Yeah, well, who knows? But look, the thing you've got to remember, and I made this comment a couple of months ago about the left, is they never sleep. The left never sleeps. They've got a ground game. They've got all the moves and the various players. They've got a national organization that just, they'll all fly in and fly out, and they'll get Richo in there to advise them. They're formidable and they're dangerous. They are a machine. They're a political machine in the true sense of the word. And again, it's worth remembering that Queensland Labor has held power for 30 of the past 35 years. That's a part 30 of the past 35 years.
Yeah.
And the political makeup of the Queensland government has changed just seven times since World War One. So there you go.
Change is not so easy in the state of Queensland. All right, I want to get to the United States now. With all the Hamas-inspired rioting that's occurring around the country and the Get Trump political strategies, you've been observing what is a general societal and cultural decay in this once great superpower. You vented on this too on Facebook this week, right?
I did. A friend of mine, well, it was today, this morning, he sent me a message, and he's an American, so he's got skin in the game, and he wrote, "Did you ever think that you would be alive to see the fall of the once mighty giant called the United States of America?" And there it is, live on television every single day. And I wrote back to him and I said, "No." And I'll just read you what I wrote. "I say this to friends and family, and they're still not interested in politics or history. I say to them, you can't be serious, and stress that only several times in history outside of war has there been such a monumental collapse, and at warp speed, one political cycle. You had Rome or Greece, Rome, French Revolution, and now we're witnessing for the once unassailable USA. The blithe and the casual indifference and the near disinterest by a lot of people, I find that absolutely appalling and disgraceful. Here's the world changing around them in real time, on television, and they're not interested." Mm-hmm. I cannot get my head around that. And it tells me about the dopey priorities of a lot of people, friends of mine, family of mine, dopey priorities of a lot of people. Even the actual logo, Chris, do you know what the logo is of the Fabian Society?
Not off the top of my head, no.
Okay, it is. You can look it up. Just Google images.
Yeah.
It is a wolf in sheep's clothing.
Yes, yeah.
That's what it is. But even that fails to convince them what they're about. That's been their logo since the day dot of the Fabian. Mm. That goes back to George Bernard Shaw and all of these people from the late 19th century.
Yep.
And like Ernest Hemingway, this collapse, it's a bit like going bankrupt. Ernest Hemingway said it happens in two ways, gradually at first and then suddenly. Mm. So you see it getting worse and worse, and all of a sudden you're over the cliff. In other words, Chris, in the case of America, it's been a slow build for over 50 years, and now the left have seized the high ground, manned the ramparts, and are pouring boiling oil on anyone who looks like a threat. And that is the metaphor for the Trump court cases. They are boiling oil, right? The left sees the cultural zeitgeist and as their opportunity to euthanize the entire republic. That's what they're trying to do. And this has happened, remember, again, all in 50 years of buildup, but final scene, all in less than 3 years, 4 years, one political cycle. And this is the end, and this is the point here, and I don't know how we're going for time. This is the point. This is the end result of kicking the can down the road and allowing the abuse of freedoms of speech. As I said, freedom of speech supposes and presupposes, rather, that people will be reasonable in their speech. Mm. It's also the end result of the dumbing down of the populace to the point where truth is no longer objective, but subjective and relative, believing that a man can become a woman. These people are the same ones who've allowed modern monetary theory, whereby you can print money, endless amount of money, and there'll be no adverse repercussions. That's what MMT mean, or what, that's one of its things.
Crazy stuff.
So, Chris, such a decadent and Nero-like society and culture that trashes norms and the laws of the universe simply doesn't deserve to survive. Mm. And I think that's what we're seeing, unfortunately. I could go on.
Sadly.
A nation with no borders is no nation at all. That's the main point.
That's his central tenet. That's the thing that he's fallen on mostly. We've heard very little about it in recent months, but up until, you know, that time, that was his greatest thorn, the policy thorn. I'm sure it'll come back to bite his backside.
Oh, I'm sure it will. Look, the Democrats, you've got to understand, I'm sure you do, that the Democrats are now a wholly owned subsidiary of the Marxist left.
Yeah.
And a vote for anyone from that side will just bring more of the same. And Trump is the only one. And even if it was somebody else there, they just wouldn't have his thick skin, as we were talking about earlier, like the rhinoceros. Mm. He's the only one that can And look what he's going through, and he's just standing up to it. Come on, do your best. Keep swinging.
Unbelievable.
And he's the only one that can steer it away from the rocks.
Correct. I've got to talk about Harvey Weinstein after a break. We'll do that. But Jim Ball, thank you so much for your time. Have a great weekend. We'll catch up next week.
Look forward to it, Chris. Thank you.
Good on you, mate. Thank you very much. Jim Ball, great to have him on the program and getting down and deep on some of these subjects and unpacking them for us, which is what we like to do at the end of the week. We've got to take a break. I'll play for you some of what the Hollywood actress Ashley Judd said about the bombshell news regarding Harvey Weinstein right after a break on TNT.
Hi, I'm Susan Lucci. I never thought about heart disease until I had my own heart event. At first, like so many other women out there, I ignored my symptoms. A slight pressure on my chest, shortness of breath. I thought, I don't have time to be sick. I had a 90% blockage in my main artery and a 75% blockage in the adjacent artery. I received two stents in my arteries. Stents developed through research funded by the American Heart Association. Those stents saved my life. I'm so grateful to the American Heart Association. Their research helped save my life. I can enjoy life with my children, my grandchildren, and my friends. Please, listen to your heart. The only reason I'm here today is because I did. Learn more about the American Heart Association's life-saving work at helpheart.org.
When the world's endangered animals need help most, when their lives are at greatest risk, when they would otherwise be lost, the International Fund for Animal Welfare is there, taking action to rescue the animals we love, to protect them and their threatened natural habitats. See how you can help animals and people thrive together at joinifall.org.
Where the story goes, we follow. Chris Smith on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Charlie has come through on our chat box on tntradio.live, and Charlie has something to say about what we've discussed with Jim Ball. Charlie says, Chris, you hit the nail on the head. They want to video down because of the Muslims in West Sydney. As for chasing Elon Musk, we are living in a Marxist country. The EDIL chasing Elon is nothing but another Marxist doing the bid for the WEF. Absolutely. That is accurate. And all the other morons as well. Thank you, Charlie. Appreciate your comments. Well, Hollywood actress Ashley Judd says the overturning of disgraced movie mogul Harvey Weinstein's 2020 rape conviction is a hard day for survivors. In an interview with BBC News, Judd said, "We live in our truth." Of course, the case against Weinstein was a landmark moment in the Me Too movement. The New York Court of Appeals ordered a new trial, so it's not over for Harvey, saying the original had been prejudiced by witnesses with claims unrelated to the charges at hand. Weinstein has maintained his innocence. Here's what Ashley Judd said yesterday.
It's a hard day for survivors, but we live in our truth. We know what happened, and the truth is consistent. You know, when Harvey sexually harassed me and then defamed and interfered with my economic and creative opportunities after I escaped him in that hotel room in 1996, I told anyone who would listen. I was filming Kiss the Girls at the time. I went straight to the set that night, told Gary Fleeter, the director, told the screenplay writer, told my agent, and no one listened. And there were all these systems that just not only tolerated, but enabled him, both men and women at the time. And part of what's so important about the Me Too movement is that not only do men who stay silent about other men's violence no longer tolerate that, but that we end impunity. And so there are all these forces at play, the institutional betrayal I mentioned earlier, and we need to have responses of institutional courage, which is actually a thing that lives at Stanford University, and people can check it out online. There's research-based and data-informed concrete steps that institutions take that respond to survivors with institutional courage. You know, oftentimes survivors say that the betrayal and the moral injury we suffer within the system is worse than the sexual body invasion we experienced in the first place.
Ashley Judd. I like the way she's come at this response. She's actually pointing to institutions that have notoriously and traditionally, historically, protected predators. whether that be predators towards women or predators towards children. Institutions have been terribly good at it, protecting those predators. That case against Harvey Weinstein was a kind of get back at the empire. And for it to fall down, yes, it's a hard thing to take for the survivors who went through all the terrible, terrible angst and anxiety in a witness box. But I still think that we've come some way through that period, whether it be Me Too or whatever you want to call it, to putting the pressure back on institutions about protecting predators and saying that, sorry, we're going to call you out. We're going to expose you. We're going to show the world that you are protecting people who should be in jail. And I think that has still been accomplished irrespective of the decision by that US court. And as I've just explained, he's got to face a retrial. And that's tough for the survivors. It's tough. It's a tough outcome, but he'll go down. He'll go down. Apple smartphone shipments in China. This is a really good story because it shows how tough and resilient the Chinese are in terms of technology against a multi-international company like Apple. Apple smartphone shipments in China tumbled 19% in the first quarter of the year, the worst performance since the pandemic, as the iPhone maker took a hit from Huawei's new product launches in the premium segment. So Huawei has taken Apple and spat it out, at least in the Chinese market. And when you think about the Chinese market, you're talking about 1.5 billion people plus. 1.5 billion. That is a market that you cannot replicate. Maybe you can in India, but they don't have the wherewithal in terms of wealth to purchase phones to the degree that Chinese people do. Apple's share in the world's biggest smartphone market fell to 15.7% in the first quarter from 19.7%. That's the worldwide drop. That put it almost level with Huawei, which saw sales jump 70%. Keep your eye on Huawei. This is according to research from Counterpoint. Apple lost its crown as the biggest smartphone seller in China to rival Vivo, sliding to third place in the quarter, followed by Huawei, whose market share jumped to 15.5% from 9.3% a year earlier. Quite amazing. Keep your eyes on Huawei, who, of course, are pressing markets right around the world with many of their premium products. Okay, I wanted to talk to you about Kamala Harris. I don't know whether this has got anything to do with Kamala Harris, but it's about someone who works with Kamala Harris. In a disturbing incident at Joint Base Andrews on Monday morning, an armed US Secret Service agent assigned to protect the vice president was hospitalized after exhibiting erratic and distressing behavior. The incident, reported as a mental breakdown, has raised concerns about the psychological well-being of those tasked with protecting Harris and other high-ranking officials. It wouldn't have anything to do with... No. According to reports, the agent in question began speaking incoherently and was spouting gibberish. Maybe he was just replicating how she speaks at press conferences. When the special agent in charge and a detail shift supervisor attempted to calm the agent, a physical altercation ensued, resulting in the agent being handcuffed and withdrawn from service for a medical assessment. But he was talking gibberish, exactly the kind of gibberish that we hear from Kamala Harris on a frequent basis. What do they call it? A word salad? The agent was detained by other Secret Service agents who intervened and ambulances were called to the scene. And look, I'm only joking, but we wish him all the best. If he is having a mental breakdown, we do hope his life improves. After an initial medical evaluation, the agent was admitted to hospital. Sources indicated that there was no indication of substance use at the time, and the matter is currently being treated as a medical incident. Disciplinary measures are not being considered at this point. Now, that was from Horn News earlier today, but it's really, really interesting in terms of Kamala Harris and the fact that she just goes from trouble to more trouble and now she's got a Secret Service agent and all sorts of strife. Anyway, we hope he recovers and things turn out okay. You know, one of the interesting statistics about the economy in the United States at the moment is the amount of money being spent on Ukraine. Have a listen to this. This is a report posted on X by Chuck Calesto. The amount of money going to Ukraine in the latest bill is more than the US spends on the entire Marine Corps. The amount of money going to Ukraine more than what the US spends on the entire Marine Corps. Put that in some context. We will be back after a break. Rebecca Barnett and also catching up with Shane Healy as well. Plenty to come. Don't go anywhere. Right here on TNT.